In Proverbs 17, verse 22, you don't really have to turn there. Most of you know this verse. It says, "A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones." Very, very true. The basic principle enunciated here is very important. You wonder why so many people are stressed, so many people have strokes, heart attacks, that type of thing. And I'm not saying that's true in all cases, but where you're under a lot of stress for whatever reason, if it's work-related, family-related, or whatever, it can lead to that type of result. We need to pay attention to that and not neglect the fact that that's the type of thing that can happen. Negative comments can be very destructive to us, so we always need to be on guard for that. Around people that are negative, around people that create negativity in us. You know, this is Satan's world. It's charged with an atmosphere of negativity. You think of what you listen to on the news. Jack LeBeau and I were talking about it coming to work today, and I wasn't familiar with it. Our computer has been down the last couple of weeks, and we finally got it back yesterday. So I was woefully behind on a number of news things, but there was the item of the quarterback at WSU committing suicide. And I don't know the background on that at all, but, you know, that's a pretty high-profile type of thing. The government shutting down for however long, we don't know. So, you know, you're just kind of immersed in this kind of negativity. We need to be attuned to this, and we need to offset it with positive thoughts and a positive attitude. We need to consciously incline our view toward things that are positive and be optimistic about whatever happens in our lives. We need to look ahead and look to something positive, regardless of what it is, and try to anticipate a favorable and the best possible income, or I should say outcome. In Romans 8, verse 28, another well-known scripture, Romans 8:28, we're told, "We know that all things work together for good." All things. Pretty all-inclusive. Everything. All. All things work together for good to them that love God. So there's the condition. The condition is that you love God. And if that's the case, then everything that happens in your life will work for your benefit, will work for good, and to them who are called according to His purpose. So if God's called you, there's a specific reason for it. There's a specific reason why everyone in this room is called. I can't tell you what it is, but God knows what it is, and He knows what trials you need to go through to fashion you, to shape you, to hone you, to get you to the point where He wants you to be. And so, because of that, things will happen. And as I said, we live in a very negative world, but the fact that we can be cheerful, that we can be positive, in spite of the things going on around us, it's a pretty strong and a pretty convincing statement to the world and to our friends and neighbors, and a remarkable example of what we stand for and what we believe You know, our example to those around us can be a beacon of light illuminating the darkness around everything else, the way we take it, the way we view it, the way we react to it, to the things happening. You know, the next time that something happens in your life, that something you consider bad or adverse, see if you can find something good in it. That's kind of a tough thing to do, but think about that. Consciously think about it. Okay, this is happening. See what can happen. I mean, what is the outcome of this, or what's a result of this somewhere down the road? You know, many of us can look back in our lives and see things that happened to us years ago, and at the time we couldn't understand why they were happening. Maybe it was a real traumatic event in our life, and yet years later you can understand, you can see the results, you can see how that affected your life. And what we thought, as I said, was bad turned out to have an entirely different effect or ending. You know, maybe you lost a job, but you ended up with something far better, or you took a different direction in your life as far as the type of work you did. Maybe you met your husband or your wife as a result of something that happened. You took the wrong bus and ended up someplace where you met the person. Or maybe something happened so that you could learn something from it. I think we've all been down that road. Turn to Psalm 119, verse 71. Psalm 119, verse 71. It is good for me that I've been afflicted, but every time we're afflicted, I don't think we say that. I know I certainly don't. I'd be lying if I said I did, but I mean, that's not my reaction every time I'm afflicted in some way, either physically or emotionally. That's just not the way we're, you know, bent. We're supposed to be working toward that, but it's difficult. It's hard. It's not easy. But it's good for me that I've been afflicted. Why? That I may learn thy statutes. And that's sometimes the only way that we learn them, that we really understand them, that we really take them and internalize them in our lives, is by having a little bit of pain, a little bit of affliction. That's just the way we're wired. You mean the reason my wife's leaving me after 15 years because I left my pajamas on the bathroom floor? And, you know, you hear people talk about things like that. And I'm not referring to myself. That's just an example. After 40 years, neither one of us are thinking about leaving. I'll guarantee you that. But that's, in many cases, the tip of a much bigger iceberg. Something that seems insignificant like that, but yet it really isn't. It's the tip of something else. And it's sometimes the type of thing that a dozen roses won't fix. If your son or daughter is about to be expelled at school, or maybe has been expelled from school, or you fill in the blanks, you know what's going on in your life. You take that event or what's occurring and ask yourself, you know, why is this happening? Why am I being afflicted in this way? You know, maybe whatever the problem is has been precipitated by a total or partial attention to or disregard for one or several of God's statutes, either flagrantly or simply because you're new in the church and you weren't even aware that that's something you should be doing. Sometimes, though, the only way we learn is if there's pain, either emotionally, physically, or both, associated with learning the lesson that we're required to learn. Many times we don't receive real blessings because God wants us, we don't receive the blessings He wants us to have because we don't seize certain opportunities when they appear. You know, desperate situations, negative things that occur in our lives can give us the impetus to make dramatic changes, open new vistas, expand our horizons. But many times we don't look at them in that way. But they can help enable us to move ahead, to jolt us out of the rut that maybe we've fallen into, in that sort of ethereal, semi-dark, shadowy, conscious state that we sometimes, quote, live in, unquote, where we find ourselves doing the same repetitive thing day after day, month after month, and year after year, with no demonstrable change taking place in our life. It's like we're going through the motions of living. I think we've all done that, are doing it, at some time or the other. But does God want us to live like that? Is that what He wants us to do? You know, we roll out of bed and fix or burn the toast for our husband, who's also rolling out of bed, half shaven and half alive, looking like death warmed over, going to work to punch a clock and then returning in the evening. And we think, is this the way God wants us to live? Turn to John 10, verse 10. John 10, verse 10. The thief cometh not but for to steal. That's the reason for him to come. And you know, there's something else interesting about this verse. I've read it for years and years. But I didn't really notice or pay attention to the fact that he comes to steal, but also to kill and to destroy. They're all three mentioned there. And it's one thing for someone to steal because they're hungry or they're destitute and they need food, maybe for themselves or their family, and that's not to condone stealing. But there's another part of that that is mentioned, and to kill. And many people, and unfortunately it tends to be skewed more toward younger people, teens, and you know, maybe people in their 20s, who to them, sometimes you'll read about accounts where so-and-so killed so many people, and it was for the thrill of killing. You know, hunters go out in the woods to kill deer or whatever they're hunting for, pheasants or grouse, presumably mostly to eat. But in this particular verse, they're not killing because they're not cannibals. They're killing just for the thrill of it. Now, sometimes in a robbery, someone gets confronted and, you know, shots are exchanged and someone get killed that way. But the way that this reads, if you really look at it, it encompasses all of these things: to steal, to kill, and to destroy, to vandalize. Many times that happens as well. We went to a YOU camp out a number of years ago. I think it was in August, somewhere on the ocean, down near Long Beach. And when we got home, we got a call while we were there saying that someone had broken in and stolen and robbed something. No one was in the house at the time. But when we got home and we started looking around at what had been taken, Veronica didn't take her wedding ring, and that was stolen. And that was fairly expensive. And there were some other things. We had some coins, didn't amount to much. But when the sheriff came and looked at what had taken place, there was a place on the bathroom floor that was yellow, that had kind of dried, semi-dried. And he said, someone just urinated there. And that was like, you know, this is in your face, you know, look what we did. There was the toilet right there if they wanted to use that, but it was done on the floor. And that's, you know, kind of indicative when you look at this. No one was killed, but they didn't have any intention of doing something good. They were there to steal, to destroy. Fortunately, they didn't vandalize anything. But that's the type of mentality, the type of attitude. He says, Jesus says, I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. You know, not being up to your neck in credit card debt or debt of any kind, but living sensibly. You know, there are plenty of scriptures that tell you how you should be living. And this is not a message to encompass and look at all those, because most of you are familiar with them. Turn to Psalm 34, verse 19. Psalm 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Eternal delivereth him out of them all. Big words, but, for one and all for the other. So we're guaranteed that we're going to have many afflictions. I mean, that's just the life of a Christian. We can't escape that. Maybe we'd like to, but if we're living righteously, we will suffer afflictions. However, the Lord delivereth him out of them all. And I know you're all familiar with the example of Job, and I'm not going to go through that, but I wouldn't want to go through something like that, even if I knew going in, okay, all of your children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren are going to die, but, you know, so many years down the road, you'll be blessed with having, another set, another new family. I wouldn't want, even knowing that, I wouldn't want to lose all of my children or grandchildren or anything like that. But God says he's going to deliver us out of our afflictions. Turn to Philippians 4, verse 11. Philippians 4, verse 11. Paul speaking here. For that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned. It was a learning process. It's something that didn't happen overnight. It's something that he had to learn because of the experiences. Being shipwrecked, being beaten, being betrayed by false brethren. And you know all of the other things because they're enumerated in the scriptures. But he said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. It's a learning process, but we have to learn it. We're not going to get away from not learning it. We either learn it or we don't. Verse 12, Paul said, for I know both how to be abased, to be down, and I know how to abound, to be up. to go hungry or to sit down to the big prime rib dinner with my friends. Everywhere and in all things, I'm instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. So very likely in your Christian life, you will learn both of these things. That are times when you're not going to be up. There are times when, for whatever reason, you're going to be down, and you're going to have to learn to deal with those times. God's Spirit and God's love will be there to help you, but He said, I've learned, and whatsoever condition I'm in, I have to learn to deal with it. Turn over to Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24 through 26. This series of verses I always enjoy reading and are some of my favorites. It's very, very basic. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. So if you have enough to eat, if you have enough to drink, if you enjoy what you're doing during your workday, what better type of life is that? I know I've mentioned this before, but when I was in the Navy, I went ashore when the ship anchored off the Straits of Gibraltar, and I happened to run into a man who lived there, and he started talking about what he did and how he went over into went over into the city and had a good time drinking and eating, and then he came back home. And that was his routine. And I thought, well, that sounds pretty good. But if that is all you're doing during your life, what does your life amount to? I mean, the eating and drinking is fine, but you've got to be doing something more. You've got to be productive in some way. You've got to be giving, as Lawrence mentioned. You've got to be here to do something. Verse 25, for who can eat or who else can hasten here unto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. So that's what you're guaranteed. God's going to give you wisdom. He's going to give you knowledge. He's going to give you joy because of that knowledge. I don't know how many of you are joyful when you think about God's promises, about this way of life. Do we fall into a rut and the habit of just taking it all for granted? We show up here every Saturday. It's a routine. You know, there are many parts of the world where brethren meet, and if they're fortunate, they meet with someone else that thinks the same way they do, perhaps once a year, if they're able to attend the feast. And sometimes that's a big if, because maybe sometimes they live hundreds, if not thousands of miles away from where people are meeting. Are we joyful? But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. So God's looking down at what we're doing, and those of us that are striving to get more money, to get a bigger car, better house, or whatever, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of those things, if it's done in the right way and if it's done for the right reason. Certainly, not going into an enormous amount of debt to do it just so you can park it in front of your garage and say to your neighbor, well, look at what I've got. Maybe not verbalizing it that way, but you know he's out there looking. So one more verse in Ecclesiastes, Ecclesiastes 3, verse 13. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. And that just reiterates what we read before in Ecclesiastes about the basic elements of life, eating, drinking, and enjoying good in what you're doing. Well, what is your main problem right now? Is it financial? Is it a family problem? Is it a work-related problem? What is your approach to it? Is it negative? Is it, woe is me? Like the world, that's typically how they view things. You know, admittedly, when problems occur, we can't be wildly ecstatic about them. But conversely, we don't need to be totally negative either. I read once about a father who had two sons. One was very negative, the other was very positive and upbeat. So he decided to make, it was kind of a test to see how they'd react. So he bought the negative boy a bright, shiny new bicycle, chrome-plated, powder blue, all the bells and whistles that you can find on a bike. And the other boy, the one that was positive and upbeat, he took this big box and filled it full of horse manure and sealed it up. And so he presented the bike to the negative boy, and he looked at it, and right away he started complaining, oh, that chrome will scratch real easy. And I'll have problems with it. And I really wanted a red bike. I didn't want a powder blue bike. And the mirror isn't where I want it. And the brakes don't really work the way they should. And he went on and on. Meanwhile, the other boy had opened his box and was going like this. And the father asked him, what are you doing? He said, Dad, with all this horse manure, there's got to be a pony in here someplace. Is that what we're like? Is that the way when something negative happens, or do we look for something different, something better? You know, there are times, obviously, when, for example, there's a death in a family where you tend to be more subdued. But understanding what we do about what's going to happen in the future, it can also be a time of rejoicing and happiness. Maybe it was time for that person to go. Maybe they had qualified to be in God's kingdom and they didn't need any more training. I mean, we don't know, only God knows. Maybe it was God's way of sparing them from any more suffering. Maybe it was to test the faith of those remaining. Or maybe it was a combination of all of these things. You know, when something happens in our lives, try to see or find the good in it, and don't have the attitude, okay, I'll tough it out now, and maybe 2 or 3 years from now, I'll understand why it's happening. You know, if we know that even in this negative world, all things will work for good, because of that, we can have a positive attitude. God is positive. God is optimistic. His hope is that everyone will be saved. Wouldn't you say that's being very optimistic? Now, that's obviously not going to happen if you look at the other verses, but he's hoping. People will change. People will see things differently. People will react differently. They'll live differently. He didn't write what I saw written on a menu a number of years ago in a restaurant, but I'm sure he inspired it because it illustrates his point of view as found in multiple scriptures throughout the Bible. And it shows what we as Christians should be and what our outlook should be as well. It said, as you ramble on through life, brother, whatever be your goal, keep your eye on the donut and not upon the hole.